Total Tuscany Podcast, number 38. Ciao, and welcome to another edition of the Total Tuscany Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined once again by my traveling partner to Tuscany, Mr. Pat Campagna. Hello, Pat.
Travis, how are you today?
You know, it could be better, but I do have to offer an apology. Apology to all of our loyal listeners who count on the content that comes from the podcast of Total Tuscany. And this is our first podcast. I'm looking at our podcast page right now since May 25th. Where did summer go?
Well, that's too long.
That is way too long. It's I have this guilt complex, like we should have been producing more content. We should be doing more podcast. And I think you and I both had the intention of doing it. It's just, you know, you have three children. I have four children. The summer got away from us, and we woke up one day going, we haven't talked about Tuscany for a long time. And these podcasts, believe it or not, folks, it's really like therapy for Pat and myself, because we have travel withdrawal. That's why we try to go to Tuscany once every 2 years for sure. We'd like to go on a yearly basis. But then we realized if we don't talk about it on a regular basis, we start getting moody. Depression sets in. We become different people. Our wives don't like us, so it's important that we get into the studio and talk about Tuscany on a regular basis.
Absolutely. It's a little Tuscan withdrawal. I think those symptoms are definitely here. And so it's exciting to talk to our next guest, because it's someone who lives there and writes about, gives us an opportunity to relive some of the experiences we just came from in March.
You know, producing these podcasts kind of make us feel we're honorary expats. That's the way I look at it. We live in the States, but yet we're honorary expats because we are talking to people from Tuscany on a regular basis. But what really keeps us connected with Tuscany and what's going on there, not just tourism-wise, but news-wise, and we've talked about it on this podcast before, is the Florentine. And Helen Farrell is the editor of the Florentine. She's been our guest on this program a couple different times. So one to talk about the Florentine, another to talk about the Pazzi Chapel restoration at the Opera di Santa Croce. Well, they have launched something new at the Florentine, and they're expanding outside of Florence and really tackling all of Tuscany,
the broader Tuscany, and that's great. That's great for us. We are challenged all the time to describe what we've seen, and how many people come up to you and ask you about our trips
almost daily. And you know, I have a friend of mine that's he's thinking about bringing his family over at Christmas time, and we're going to sit down and have dinner, and I'm going to go over that with him. But really, I'm going to start pointing them in the right direction of the Florentine and the Tuscan Times, because this will give you news, give you ideas, and really kind of bring you up to date in an all-encompassing way of what Tuscany is really all about. And that's why it's great to have Helen Farrell back on the Total Tuscany Podcast. Helen, welcome back to the Total Tuscany Podcast. It's always good to have you here.
Thank you for welcoming me back. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys.
You know, about a month ago, we follow each other on Twitter, and I follow you personally. I follow the Florentine, and we had just gotten back from Tuscany, and I saw that you were launching a new form of content in the Tuscan Times. So, you know, take us through the process of what the Tuscan Times exactly is.
Okay, the Tuscan Times is something that we've been thinking about for quite a while. It's the brainchild of our director, Marco Badiani, who has ideas all the time, and it's wonderful, you know, because there's this creative vibe going on in the office. And Marco's been championing the Tuscan Times since I've been on board at the Florentine. And we had all the social media accounts set up. They've been active for quite a while. And that's been our way of sort of testing the waters, so to speak, you know, to see whether there's sufficient interest out there to set up a separate entity, a separate publication. So basically what happened was we thought, well, you know, we like doing the Florentine. It's great, but let's try something new, because otherwise we get bored, you know? So we decided, why not sort of launch the Tuscan Times as part of the summer issue? Because let's face it, I mean, Florence in the summer, it gets hot, it's humid, it's a struggle. Most people actually head out into Tuscany or to the coast anyway. So it seemed like the ideal time to launch the Tuscan Times on paper. And that's what we did. So it's been out there now for a couple of months in print, and the reception has been exceptional, I have to say.
You're printing in this is distributed in New York as well?
Yes, also distributed in New York from a little eatery called Migaba. They fly out the food from Tuscany, and you know, you can head to 129 4th Avenue. There you are, I'll get the plug-in for them. And sample some Tuscan wine, some Tuscan food, and read the Florentine and the Tuscan Times while you're sat there in the heart of New York. So, yes, we're also in New York.
And we should have done a little bit of background, and that was, you know, the Florentine and the Tuscan Times, both English-speaking periodicals or magazines. So, I mean, it is for people who speak and read English. And I know you were in New York, last year. How much do you see, you know, you live in Florence, you travel extensively. You were just in New York. How much is there that need for information and news about Tuscany, not just where you're at, but when you come to the States and you see that?
I'm not sure it's a need as such, but there's certainly a desire, you know, to read about Italy and Tuscany in particular. There seems to be a real affinity that New Yorkers in particular have towards Italy and Tuscany. I'm not quite sure what it's about, but there's a general affinity between the two. I know that, for example, we're currently working on the new website for the Florentine, which will launch in the next couple of months. And when we were looking at the analytics, we were flabbergasted. We were shocked to see that the actual numbers say that the Florentine is read more in New York, in San Francisco, and in London than we are in Tuscany online. So that goes to show that there's a definite connection, you know, between the States and Tuscany, and Florence in particular.
Helen, it's kind of a tug of war for me, having just been there in March and wanting to get the news out and spread the word about Tuscany. All those things we've talked about before, and at the same time wanting to preserve the quiet aspect, the less traveled aspect of Tuscany. So it's kind of do you see that same dichotomy where you're getting the news out at the same time you're bringing a lot of people there and changing it a little bit?
I mean, there is a part of me personally that doesn't want to talk about certain restaurants, you know, or
they're yours. You want to keep them secret.
We need people to flock there. But that's our job. You know, that's what we do. We get the word out about Florence, about Tuscany, because people don't want to go play ball the past. And what we do with the Florentine and what we hope to do with the Tuscan Times as it goes forward is provide insight. So go beyond the surface, not what you find in the guidebooks or, you know, online from various news outlets who don't really know the area like the people do who live here, you know. So that's what we want to do, is bring some depth to the area, to Tuscany and to Florence. And what we do in the Tuscan Times is we have people, expats who live in all over Tuscany, and they're writing about their experiences, their lives, you know, their stories. So it's not superficial in any way. And that's what's so wonderful, I think, about the Tuscan Times, is providing this sort of insight about little food festivals that people might not know about, or photographic exhibitions. There's so much going on in Tuscany that maybe people aren't aware about.
You know, it's interesting because I love to hear the stories of the expats that live there. And even though we've only, you know, we go every other year or try to go every year if we can, and this podcast makes us feel like expats, we're not. But are you amazed how popular Tuscany continues to get? It doesn't seem like it's slowed down at all. I mean, people still flock to Tuscany.
They do. And I think you find, you know, you get the tourists who come for the first time and maybe don't come back. But then it's the number of repeat travelers, you know, that come to this area, people who, you know, fall in love with it. When we had the launch party for the Tuscan Times, it was held near Cortona, you know, which is a very popular expat area. And there were people there who were just waxing lyrical about their lives. You know, they came to Tuscany on holiday and they stayed here. They bought a house, and now maybe they fly between London and Tuscany, and they've created a life that way. I think what's also interesting about Tuscany as an area is you've got the obvious places where people go to. You know, people come to Florence, they go to Pisa and see the Leaning Tower. They go to Siena for the Palio. But there are other areas which are growing that in the past people wouldn't really talk about, like the Maremma, which is a beautiful, wild part of Tuscany that, you know, people aren't aware of at all. And the Mugello in the north, very mountainous, famous for, you know, its food products. So that's what's interesting is the absolute wealth and the diversity of Tuscany.
Helen, is there a particular story you've heard from one of the expats just since you've launched? The depth of detail in the reporting that kind of struck you that you didn't know about?
There's lots of different things. I think what was interesting at this launch party that we had was the ideas, you know, that people were coming and presenting to us and things that we'll talk about as we move forward. I'm just thinking whether there was one story in particular. There's a poet who lives near Montepulciano, and she'd written a poem about the restoration of a little chapel in Montepulciano, which came to the local Italian newspapers, got to hear about this English poetess, you know, and she was approached by this local radio station, and they recorded her and made a video about her as she reads her poem out. I mean, things like this, you know, things that these expats give back culturally to their local areas, and how actually they can fascinate the Italians with their perspective on things and ways of communicating. That was particularly lovely.
What will set the content apart from the Tuscan Times, from the Florentine, or will there be sharing of content?
There will be sharing. In the interim, there'll be sharing between the two publications. This first issue, we decided to launch it half and half. So basically, you pick up a copy of the Florentine, you turn it over, and there's the Tuscan Times. There are two covers. When you see it, it makes sense. It's quite hard to explain, you know, verbally. So at the moment, there is a definite connection between the two publications. But, you know, we're hoping. This is a test. It's an experiment. We're hoping that as we move forward, maybe the Tuscan Times will be able to exist in its own right. At the moment, it's regarded very much as a sort of a supplement to the Florentine.
Will this be a annual publication, a semi-annual publication, quarterly? What's the plan of release for the Tuscan Times?
So we just released in August, and the next thing we will do, we'll release in December. So the idea is it will come out sort of every 6 months, you know, a winter issue and a summer issue, because they're the two times of the year when Tuscany is particularly magical. But who knows? You know, like I say, it's an experiment. If we see that there's enough demand, then we, you know, we could release it quarterly or even more regularly than that. In the meantime, all of the social media outlets, so Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, we're active all of the time on those channels.
And so, Helen, can our listeners subscribe to the Tuscan Times, an online version, or is it just the print version?
You can also subscribe. Basically, you subscribe to the Florentine and you get the Tuscan Times as well. That's the way it works at the moment. So you get a bit of Tuscany thrown in with your Florentine content. So yes, that's how it's working, mainly through subscription by our major, the mothership channels of the Florentine.
How much, you know, as you put together an English-speaking newspaper and put this out, whether it be the Florentine or the Tuscan Times, how much do you look at the way you deliver content? And that, you know, us who live in the States that are dying for new content all the time, do you still prefer, you know, doing it in writing? Do you see pictures becoming much more viable? How about video or even, you know, a radio show / podcast like this? I mean, do you see your world and the way you deliver content to people who are enthusiastic about Tuscany changing?
I think it's constantly changing all the time, how we deliver news. And that's what I particularly love about what we're doing, is that I think this is an exciting time to be working for a publication. I know some people, you know, see it all as a bit of a daunting thing, you know, coming up with ways of delivering all the time. You've got so many ways in which you stay in touch with your public. So the whole social media thing, being online all the time, first with everything, but then maintaining quality in print. It's not easy, it's demanding, but you have to find the right ways of engaging your public. So photos are important. It's something that I've learned since I've been in this job and wouldn't really want to admit. You know, for a long time, I didn't want to admit how important photos are. But they, in many ways, they're so much more important than words are, I mean, engaging people's attention. once you've got people's attention, then yes, the words matter and the quality matters about what, you know, what you, the quality of the articles and what you're printing about. But I think these are exciting times, and it's something that, you know, we're very interested in doing, is testing new ways of publishing. So in this instance, we gauged the interest first on social media for the Tuscan Times, and then we decided to print it as a supplement to a publication that's successful. So I think it's a great time. Don't you think so? In terms of doing podcasts, I think it's an exciting time to be coming up with content.
What I find interesting about content, and you're right, we love doing the podcast. And when we were over there, I shot a great amount of video, and we were able to produce a couple of videos. It's producing that content, but it's also finding the ways to distribute that content. You know, obviously, you know, the newspaper is your distribution, but how you use those social media channels to reach out to people, and you realize on the social media channels how many people all over the world share the same passion as you, and that's what's fun to me is where can I distribute it and where are people picking up the content from, and that's what's amazing to me are the social media channels.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's the engagement. You know, we put up a photo of somewhere astonishingly beautiful in Tuscany, and the reaction, you know, oh, I was there, like you say, you know, I was there in the spring and we had a wonderful time, and the memories. You know, so people who maybe haven't been to Florence or to Tuscany for a few years, but they see a photo and they come out with a memory of the time that they were here. I think news and news delivery nowadays is very much based on the visual, and that's something that, you know, that maybe in the past we would never have considered, but that's the way it's going, and that's where we need to be at, and that's what we're trying to do all the time, is deliver visually as well as quality in print.
Helen Farrell is our guest on the Total Tuscany podcast. Of course, she's with the Florentine and now the Tuscan Times. Just to get the Tuscan Times, you can subscribe to it online by just going to the Florentine, and we'll have a link to that right here in our podcast page. You know, as we're getting into fall, let's talk about Tuscany. We've got some time here, in because you have the expert opinion, and we were talking before we hit the record button. We were just there in March, and most of our trips have been in the spring. What are we missing out by not having visited in the fall?
The fall is a magical time in Tuscany. It's my favorite time of the year, but I'm a foodie. I'm a passionate foodie. That's one of the reasons I would find it very, very difficult to leave this country, and Tuscany in particular. In the fall, you've got the olive trees and the olive harvest. And last year, unfortunately, it was a terrible year for both the olives and the wine. But this year is looking terrific. So there's nothing like when you taste that first peppery green gold olive oil, you know, if you've helped to pick the olives and you know, be involved with the process. And then you have the vino novello, the new wine, you know, that's just been produced, which is often used as an indicator of how that vintage is going to be in future years. Plus there are all of the food festivals, the sagre. There's just a wealth of those in Tuscany. So there's so much. Plus you've got the scenery, you know, which the leaves are changing, and it's all so different as the weather cools down, and Tuscany is a joy to visit, I think, in the fall.
You know, as we go through the seasons, I'm actually meeting with a couple, I think, in a couple of weeks that is considering going over the Christmas time. And I've never been there in the winter, and Pat hasn't either. But what is the winter like in Tuscany? Is people start to say, okay, because typical Americans are going to look, you know, at the price, say, well, it's fairly reasonable to go to Tuscany in the winter time. But what's the weather like? What is the weather like in November, December, and January?
In the past, I would have said to you, it's cold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in recent years, actually, I think the winters are becoming milder. So it's not a bad year. It's not a bad time of the year to visit at all, I think. I'd recommend it also for the customs. You know, if you're here over Christmas and if you have a Tuscan family that you can spend the holidays with, it's fascinating, you know, to see what they eat and the various customs that take place. And being in Florence city centre, for example, for New Year's is quite special as well.
Does it snow there?
Infrequently. Normally there's a smattering. I mean, if you're up in the hills, in the mountains, yes. But rarely in Florence. Although we keep having freak weather occurrences. I don't know if you've heard about the recent event. We had a sort of a pseudo tornado as well, which was weird. And last September we had a crazy hailstorm. So The answer is you never quite know these days what Corona is going to be like.
Helen, do you see subscribers to the Tuscan Times any way to know whether these are people that have been to Tuscany that are trying to relive these experiences throughout these seasons, or are these people that are exploring for the first time? Is there a demographic there that you are aware of?
I think the demographic of the readers of the Tuscan Times and the Florentine are people who either set up home here, you know, they fall in love with the area and they can't tear themselves away, whether it's full-time or, you know, part-time basis. So it's either expats who've set up home here, or it's people who, like yourselves, you know, who come repeatedly to Tuscany. So it's not people who just come for the first time. I think there's some sort of bond, and that's what we aim to fill. You know, this to give people sort of a container, an outlet for their passion for Tuscany and for Florence. That's the sort of demographic that we're aiming for, that we seem to reach on a regular basis.
Yeah, I ask because listening to you and Travis talk, having just been there, and we know a fair amount, but like you said, we don't live there. It would be so nice to have a brick and mortar place like the Tuscan Times to stop into as a touch point when you arrive and explore the region from there. I mean, that may want to think about that.
Because you're almost a visitor center.
Yeah, an unofficial visitor center.
Oh, a visitor center. That's interesting. Okay, as soon as the publisher gets back, I'll run that by him.
Because
it's an interesting idea. Well, I never thought of it. But
we study and we know what we want to see, and we try to leave lots of room for exploration. And I don't know about you, but when we get there, we forget half the things we wanted to go do.
Yeah.
I imagine. I mean, there's just so much as well. I mean, I find that. I mean, one of the amazing parts about what I do as editor of the Florentine and now the Tuscan Times is being able to visit the most incredible places where I've never been to before. And some of them, I admit, you know, I hold my hands up quite shamefully that I should have been there in the nearly 15 years I've lived in this country and haven't been to before. I mean, it's an issue, isn't it? How do you cover everything that this region and the city of Florence have to offer?
It's
not easy.
It's not easy. And I remember the first time we visited in 2009, we stayed in San Gimignano. And one of my business ideas was I need to set up, because we had the language gap. And I was like, I need to set up an English visitor center in San Gimignano. So all the English people come in and say, hey, what am I doing and where am I going? Because I think I saw a lot of confused people just trying to figure out where to go. So we just gave you the idea. You need to start a visitor center in Florence.
Thank you for that. I'll make sure, you know, we stay in touch about that as an idea. But I mean, it's true though. It's not easy to cover everything, and it's not always easy to find the information that you need when you're visiting a place. I mean, that's why both the Tuscan Times and the Florentine, you know, we have an extensive events listing, you know, so people know what's going on at any given time. And it's essential, you know. I think that one of the most wonderful things is when a Florentine or an Italian comes up to me and says, you know, oh, you know, thank you so much for everything that the Florentine does, because there isn't that valid an outlet in Italian for this information either. So, I mean, that's good to know. You know, there's no greater compliment than somebody born and raised in that town coming to you and thanking an English language outlet. I think that's a wonderful thing.
Before we let you go, the last time when we were there in March, the scaffold was still up in the Pozzi Chapel. I know that was a project very near and dear to your heart. We talked about it several times on this podcast. Is the scaffolding down? Is the Pozzi Chapel now open for everybody?
I just got back from 2 weeks in England, so I can't definitively say whether it's down yet or not. But the one thing I can say is that in the September 10th issue of the Florentine, there's going to be a four-page special. so make sure you read the Florentine in September. No, because, I mean, like you say, it's a project that's very dear to all of us at the Florentine and to everybody, you know, around the world who supported the Crazy for Patsy crowdfunding campaign, and to whom, you know, I'd like to thank again on behalf of Opera di Santa Croce and the Florentine, because without that help, this restoration wouldn't have been possible. So there will be photos and there will be reports on how the restoration went, and various information, like I say, in the upcoming issue of the Florentine. And I'm aware that there's, I think there's an evening coming up as well in September, you know, to inaugurate the restoration. So it's going to be exciting and very emotional, I imagine, to see the Patsy Chapel, that loggia, restored in all its glory.
So if you're looking for a reason to get the Florentine and get that subscription, Helen just sold it. You get to see the special spread on the Patsy Chapel, and it's very much worth it because it's a wonderful, wonderful place at the Opera di Santa Croce. Helen Farrell, the editor of the Tuscan Times and the Florentine, you're always a wonderful guest. I know you're going to be back with us again at least sometime. We appreciate your time today, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bo. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with you. See you next time you're in Florence,
ciao.
I hope.
Absolutely. Ciao. Now, Pat, you're lucky, and you happen to share it with me, is that you are a subscriber to the Florentine. So you already get the Florentine and the Tuscan Times.
I do. And it's fantastic. They do in print what we do with this podcast, which is to try to go into detail one story at a time and share how cool this place is.
You know, I never thought of it until you brought it up in the middle of that conversation, was there aren't really visitor centers there. You know, if they are, I don't know where they are. I found most of the visitor centers to be the tour guides we used, or when we stopped by Florence Town Tours, you could ask somebody, or use a concierge at your hotel. But I don't think there's really a visitor center like we see here when you go to major cities in the United States.
And if there is, it's pretty out of the way because we've spent a lot of time and haven't spotted it. But it to have a friend, to have a spot you could go and say, you know, I remember there was an article about a restaurant in Pistoia. Do you remember what that was and where that would be? And that would be a fantastic, fantastic outlet for the Florentine and the Tuscan Times.
And if they are looking for a couple of guys that would like to man the booth, I think you and I are raising our hands.
We are raising our hands.
You know,
now.
We'll take major pay cuts and just move to Florence. We'll find a way to make that work. Of course, Helen talked extensively about the social media channels and getting the word out. You can follow Total Tuscany on many different social media channels. Please follow us on Twitter at Total Tuscany. You can find us on our Facebook page. Just search Total Tuscany. And we're also on Instagram. I haven't been Instagramming very much, but we're there. We've got some good pictures out, and we'll start Instagramming some more. So we hope you found this podcast interesting. Please share it with your fellow travelers. And if you have any questions about Tuscany, feel free to email me, travis@totaltuscany.com, or you can also email pat@totaltuscany.com. Pat, good conversation. Can't wait to get back in the studio again soon, my friend.
Absolutely. And we promise we're coming out with another one soon.
We promise, promise, promise. Remember, live each and every day as you're in Tuscany. We'll talk to you next time.